Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey everyone, it's Carrie Oberbrunner, and I have here again Eric Diaz, our special guest for tonight. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Carrie. Thanks for having me again. I'm excited. I love talking blockchain with you. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, listen, there's so many new things that happen each week in blockchain, and you and I chatted about that, how it's pretty much like we come out with an episode and then, hey, what happened this next week? But we're still in the basics. And so we explained a little bit about the why behind the emergence of Bitcoin. But now let's talk about Ethereum, because that kind of changes everything. Share with us what Ethereum allows us to do.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, with cryptocurrency, you know, the first original one was Bitcoin, and, you know, it still stands today and is very resilient. And according to, you know, market cap, which means total value of all the tokens, you know, that are in the market, Bitcoin stands the lead. However, number two is Ethereum. And what's interesting about Ethereum is that Ethereum brought to the forefront a complete new use cases for this technology. You know, everything you probably hear about today besides Bitcoin wouldn't have been possible if it wasn't for the creation of Ethereum.
Wow.
So yes, so I got into a little bit about this, you know, last time, but essentially Bitcoin isn't Turing complete, doesn't allow for full programmability, and Ethereum came forward and brought that ability. And it was with them keeping in mind decentralized finance. So, you know, the financial system is very complex. There's a lot of things that happen every day, you know, securities, there's about borrowing and lending, you know, a lot of things like that. And the creator of Ethereum, along with a few others, the main guy behind the project, his name is Vitalik Buterin. And, you know, they came in mind with, you know, creating this decentralized finance. And they originally proposed this idea to the developers of Bitcoin, and they weren't on board with it. You know, I don't think that was wrong of them not to be on board with it. But, you know, their reasoning was it wasn't in the original white paper for Bitcoin. So it wasn't in the, you know, its purpose to be created for that. And they also thought that not too many people would use it, which on that side, you know, proven to now that that's kind of wrong. So what this allows for is essentially anything you can program normally on computing, you can now kind of program that in, you know, on the blockchain. So now you can have these bits of code that can now basically run programs with your assets while holding assets, which is completely, you know, a brand new idea. So, you know, for example, you know, NFTs, non-fungible tokens, I'm sure many of you have heard of NFTs, you know, they wouldn't be as complex as they are today if it wasn't for Ethereum. So
here's an example. Here's an example. And maybe we talked about this already, but I love it. People can get a repeat if they haven't heard it. But back in the day when we would buy collectibles, right? So back in the day, let's say I buy some Star Wars lunchbox. If I sell that Star Wars lunchbox, I get a profit. But Star Wars would never get a profit. George Lucas would never get a second profit. In other words, they only get the profit once. But you're telling me with Ethereum and NFTs, we can actually program it. So anytime that is sold forever and ever and ever, the original owner could get 10%, 15% royalties for the rest of their life.
Yes, that is correct. And what's interesting about that is one of, I'd say, thousands of different things you can now do with this technology with that kind of, you know, product, that idea behind of a collectible and things like that. You know, as we've spoken to about before, you know, you can have these NFT collectibles which allow you access to different things. You know, you could, you know, let's say you have a group of followers, you can grant them each NFTs, in which in turn they can use for access to, let's say, an online class that only those users that hold those NFTs can access, or they can access an event, you know, a lot of different things. Some of the use cases that to me are more mind-blowing as it starts to get more complex is that you can now have these digital assets being represented by NFTs that you can actually use online. So, you know, let's give an example with video games. So in video games, you can have, you know, your cars, you know, your avatar has his cars. And let's say in that game, you race and, you know, you work very hard to build up these cars. You level up for these cars, or you might even put outside dollars into the game to be able to upgrade your car. Mm-hmm. Now, once you enter the dollars into the game and your time, you know, trying to build up that car in the game, that's that. There is no outside value. It's the value that it has in the game, and you can use it, but you can't extract that value. Now with NFTs, these in-game objects can be NFTs, and you can extract that value in selling that NFT to somebody, or you can trade it for something else. So it adds, excuse me, this sense of utility that becomes different, and it's starting to leak into areas like social media. Sure. As you've seen with...
Sure.
As you
hang on 1 second. So do you want where I love what you're getting into here. Do you think you can chat with the AirPods out? I think they're crackling a little bit still.
Oh yeah. No problem.
It's all good. So folks, this is where Eric's getting into the metaverse. Perfect. You sound a lot better now. So tell us, like, in the past, yeah, we would just go online. In my generation, we would play Super Mario Brothers or, you know, something like that. I'm dating myself. But now you're saying you play video games and there's a utility component to it, or a spending ability. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, a big popular game in the past few years has been Fortnite. And I'm sure, you know, people have heard, you know, people put money in and they buy these cosmetics, these skins where, you know, your player can dress like this, or your player can dress like Spider-Man or whatever. But those things cost in-game tokens, which you can earn through playing. Or what a lot of people do is they put money in and they buy these cosmetics. So, you know, when the game first started, for example, this can translate to your belief in something. So when the game first started, obviously, there was only a few select amount of players versus where the game is now. It's grown in huge popularity. And in the beginning, they released this cosmetic, which was called like the Red Knight skin. And they considered, if you were to see somebody running around in the game with that skin, like, oh, that's an OG. That person isn't playing from the beginning. That skin was only...
And again, my crowd might not even know what OG is, and that's cool. So let's define OG.
Like original, like OG stands for original, like an original player. He was there from original the beginning.
Gangster, right? Something like
that. Oh, yeah.
Right? I don't know. Right?
Yeah, OG. I guess so. I guess original gangster. Yeah. You know, somebody that was there from the beginning, because like I said, that skin was only available in the beginning aspects of the game. And that skin holds a lot of value. So if people wanted to extract that value, they have to go through a process of selling their complete account. You know, there's trust issues there, giving your account to somebody else. It's very complicated. Now with NFTs, that skin can become an NFT and you can sell it on a marketplace very easily.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, through using DeFi, decentralized finance, this brings that trustless aspect now into trades, into the marketplace, where through the blockchain and through this new programmability, you can create these contracts that create these fair and easy swaps of assets. Now,
this is huge. This is huge, man. I want people to realize this, because the first time I heard this, you know, my friend, our mutual friend Tyler, who I'm sure I'll have on the show coming up, but he was kind of telling me about this. And I said, I'm right on the edge between being too old and being not old enough. Here's where my older speaking was talking to me, like, that's stupid. And I think some people might be hearing this and they say, that's stupid, like status based on digital pixels. But here's what I want people to realize. Our generation and the past generation and the generation before them, we've always done this. I'll give you examples. When you go up and you see military has right across their chest, certain types of badges and awards and credentials, and immediately you can say, oh my gosh, that person has fought in this battle, they've had this honor, they've had this bravery. Or when you go into the university, you can say, oh my gosh, that professor has tenure. Or when you go to the race car track, you can say, oh my gosh, look at that person's car, or look at how it's souped up. So I want people to realize, like, this isn't just a young person's thing. This is a human thing, what Eric's talking about. And that's why, especially I think what escalated this even more was the quarantine. Mm-hmm. Because we said that, okay, instead of just what are you wearing in real life, now we go online where a lot of us live, and you can see what people are wearing or achieving. And I've heard that a Gucci bag online in some of these worlds, digital worlds, is more expensive than a real Gucci bag or whatever you want to say. Talk to us about that, because I know you're in your 20s and I'm in my 40s. And I want people to realize, like, this is changing everything. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it does have a lot to do with what you were saying, how status has existed for a long time. Something I feel like would make more sense is kind of like the verified badge on Twitter, or how many followers you have online, things like that. Like, that creates a sense of status. And now, you know, with NFTs and the metaverse, which is this new online immersive kind of world which exists. And the reason it's becoming so validated is because the blockchain allows it for it to be sort of this alternate economy. Since we're talking about value and all these things, it creates sort of this alternate economy. And with there being an alternate economy, which has money, which has incentives, which, you know, humans are greedy and they look for those incentives. You know, it kind of creates this alternate online universe that's brought to us by the possibility of blockchain and smart contracts, which allow for this sort of programmability that kind of makes this alternate online universe kind of validated, just because it's an alternate economy. There's money moving around, there's money to be made, there's money being produced. And, you know, along with these alternate economies, just like in a real life economy, there are things that bring status, whether it can be objects, whether it could be who you are, things that represent who you are, such as, you know, a degree, being tenured, your military status, all of these sort of things now translate in their own, you know, unique way into this alternate online universe. So
that can't be fabricated. So what I want people to realize is, like, back in the day, you could hold up a Rolex and someone would be like, dang, that looks real. And you only the extreme Rolex expert could tell you if it was a fake. But today with blockchain, we can immediately tell if somebody is absolutely messing with us and deceiving us, or the blockchain can verify that, no, that is actually an original and Tom Brady owned it. I mean, that's the other thing that we're able to tell now is where a work of art or a digital asset began and who owned it. And so now there's like levels upon levels. So like that one piece, that one coffee cup that you just picked up, what if we could scan it with our phone and it would have a NFT representative and you could say, oh my gosh, Oprah had that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And that's the best part about this. What you just mentioned, I'm not even sure if it exists, but it can exist. And it's kind of like, you know, I'm sure we referred to this earlier, you know, at the early stages of the internet, you could not have foreseen, like, oh, one day you're going to be on your phone and you're going to like tap some buttons and a stranger is going to come pick you up and you're going to get in the Uber.
Exactly.
He's going to take you to your location. Exactly. You're like, man, are you crazy? You know, things like that. So that's what's so amazing about this. We just talked about metaverse. Who knows what else that can bring forward? And that's just, what's interesting about metaverse is that is just kind of like one sector of the different things that, you know, full programmability, thankfully, to Ethereum brought to the system. Now, what I would like to mention, though, is that while Ethereum was the first to do this, Ethereum is what you call a layer one protocol. So a layer one protocol is essentially, think about like the base of an internet. The base of a network is Ethereum. Now, all these things we've been talking about, the metaverse, all these things, they're built on applications that are built on top of this base.
And what do we call those? Are those dApps?
DApps, decentralized applications. DApps for sure is what you would call them. Now, there are metaverse dApps that create these online virtual worlds. There's DeFi dApps that create, that decentralized finance. And that I think that could be an episode of its own. There's oracles. Now, oracles are very important. Chainlink is the world's biggest oracle company. They have, their Chainlink token. And what they do is that in a decentralized manner, they aggregate all this data from all over blockchain, whether it's on an L1 like Ethereum, and there are other L1s, which I'll get into, but there's other L1s, and they derive, let's say if me and you are trading, let's say we're trading Ethereum on a DeFi platform, and we're trading it right now for $5,000. It's DeFi, right? So the protocol has to know, another DeFi protocol has to know that, okay, the going price right now for Ethereum is $5,000. Like, let's make sure that when somebody interacts with this contract, the going rate is $5,000. There's oracles, which is like Chainlink, which interact with all of these other contracts at the same time and basically aggregate the data of like, okay, the price of Ethereum right now is $5,000, and pushes it out to all the other DeFi contracts to make sure that, everything's trading at a fair price. Because mind you, like I said, this is, excuse me?
Because it's so volatile, it can go up and down.
Exactly.
Crypto and crypto today could be worth something, and it's 20% less tomorrow, or 20% more.
Yeah, it's a new asset class. A lot of asset classes, that's not unusual. Asset classes, when they're new in nature, just because of the there's so much less money. So think about overall equities market, the stock market. There's billions and trillions of dollars into that. So because there's so money vested into that, it's not as volatile because, it's like, let's say 500 billion today were to trade. That's way less effect of what 500 billion in a crypto market, which is less in total value than, it's just that's amount, same amount of money has higher effect versus on the equities market. So that's not, even though it's volatile, and, I advise everybody to be careful, to make sure they do their research. And if you want to get invested, understand that that is something that, it's an asset class that you have to understand it's very high risk. But, just like tech companies in the beginning, very volatile, so when an asset class is new, that's not unusual for things to be volatile.
But it's going to find its equilibrium. And even though I'm reading this great book called The Internet of Money, and I think I told you about it, but yeah, he's saying it's almost like he says Bitcoin and crypto is almost like a rat where it's been exposed to so many viruses, it keeps coming back, meaning it's strong. And he kind of says that he uses the metaphor that the bubble boy, or someone who is has a jacked up immune system, and they have to be protected and live in a bubble and never are exposed to viruses, they're the ones who can get fatally killed. And his point was to say that everyone's trying to take down Bitcoin, and they have been since the beginning, but it keeps on surviving. It keeps on building up immunity. And that's what the blockchain does. So people who are saying, oh, we killed Bitcoin, and we're going to kill all this other crypto, I think what they're realizing is that it's coming back. Yeah, it dips, but it's coming back stronger and stronger and stronger. And that is much different than fiat money, where there's no longer any backing for it in terms of gold or value, and it's just the government printing money. And so I know we're getting into a lot of things, but this is the reality of blockchain. It's not just a currency, it's a philosophy, it's a utility, it's affecting let's talk about how would it affect an author someday, Eric?
Okay. But what I want to say first,
Yeah.
based of what you were saying, what's important to understand about cryptocurrency, you know, I'm shying away a little bit from Bitcoin because Bitcoin, we explained in the last episode, it's very transactional versus now with all these other currencies, there's other L1s, Ethereum, Solana's one to mention, Tezos.
Cardano, you like, right?
Cardano, yeah. Binance. Binance is a centralized company, but they have also their own layer one. You know, there's a lot of other ones. And basically the point is that these networks essentially allow for the users to take part in ownership of the internet.
Wow.
Versus today, there's a handful of companies that basically hold all the monetary value of the internet. Google, Amazon, Facebook, well, Meta now, you know, and they pretty much control the money in the internet. You know, everything derives some way or somehow from them. Versus now with these blockchain networks, it essentially gives ownership back to the user. Now, with being an author, I think this can contribute in a lot of ways to an author. I'd say, you know, first, if you're an author watching this podcast, I think you're taking a step in the right direction, mm-hmm. looking to learn, looking to understand different things that might be outside of your comfort zone. And that's always important to do, you know, as a creator. And it can impact an author, and I feel like in a lot of different ways. They can, you know, find ways that technology can contribute to them as well as their audience. Now that could be, you know, I think one of the easiest ways paths to go down is to, you know, kind of look into and understand how NFTs can help you and your audience. You know, it might not, you know, there's different things that NFTs can provide for you and your audience, whether it can be, you know, a commemorative NFT. So how I mentioned earlier, the beginner users of Fortnite, if they were to have that red skin, you know, and if it were NFT, unfortunately it's not, they had been able to capitalize on the fact that they were early believers of that game.
Mm.
So if you're an author, if you could essentially hand out NFTs along with each copy of your book, there could be an NFT, or there can be.
Like, for example, Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich, if NFTs existed, he could have said the first 5 books ever will have NFT corresponding, and that NFT could unlock a secret chapter.
Yeah, exactly, Kerry. Right? I think you're going down the right path, because as I explain these things, you're sort of coming up with these different ideas, like, oh, we can do this, we can do that.
Right. It's so crazy, man. Like, Eric, check this out. I'm on the security team at my church, and I want people to realize, like, the reason why I'm talking about this, A, is I don't know everything. In fact, I probably don't know anything. Now, you might be hearing Eric and I and be like, dang, how are these guys knowing what dApps are and, you know, all these different things. But I love this conversation, because here's my point. Today at our church, you get a little sticker when you check in your kid, and they put the sticker on the kid's back, and then they go into the nursery, and then the parent goes to the service. Now, when they come back to pick up their kid, they show the sticker and they get their kid. Now, think about how jacked up that is. What happens if they drop the sticker?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else picked up the sticker. You're talking about, you could go pick up a kid, you know, like a baby who can't even speak yet, and show them a little sticker, and now you take their kid. If this was tied to the blockchain, it would have been scanned into your digital wallet, and you'd show the security your phone, which can't be compromised, and we would scan your phone, and they would be tied to the blockchain, and we'd say, yep, that's your kid. That's kind of, my mind's just blowing, man.
Something right. I want to say about that is that, so what you, the example you just gave,
yeah.
I feel like a lot of people that could be watching this would be like, oh, they're crazy. Like, why would, you know, you'd find another system. That just sounds too complicated, right?
But it's
something,
not.
Something I want to know, it's kind of funny that we talked about this the other day.
Yeah.
My parents, you know, they immigrated here from the Dominican Republic. And my father, he grew up sort of like in this village in the mountains, wasn't a lot of electricity, things like that. And somebody, you know, from back in his country had showed him sent him a video of these beans they had grown on the countryside. And he's like, oh, look at these beautiful beans. Like, they just grew it. And I laughed, because I was like, you know, in, let's say, 20 years ago, if somebody were to tell you that somebody would be sending you a video right now of you looking at these beans that just grew on the countryside, like something so small and so random, like you'd be like, first of all, like, that's a pointless thing to do. That sounds like a lot of work. All these other things, you know, like, no, that just makes no sense. It's just too much work, things like that. And then now it's something as simple as that. So I feel
crazy.
Like, so people might think like these ideas sound a little bit out of line or far away. And the reality is they're closer than you think they are. And the way technology evolves, it's essentially the previous technology brings something here, and then new technology takes it from there and goes here. So as technology keeps on going faster and faster, it essentially has the shoulders of the previous technology to go somewhere. So technology essentially moves at an exponential rate.
Absolutely. It's like I was reading recently, and folks, I encourage you, this is just one podcast that you need to stay in tune with, because Eric and I, man, Eric is a massive student. He's teaching me so much. And then I say, you know, I'm going out and reading a ton too. But the internet was originally a defense network. And look at what it's become. It's become a place where we share cat videos. in other words, no one would have thought 20 years ago that the internet, you and I would be live streaming, creating forever assets that, you know, links Ohio to New York, and we're talking about ideas, and we can press a button, and now the whole world sees it. It is truly incredible. And that's your point. Your point is blockchain. All we're talking about is about this many uses today. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we're going to step into that, and all of a sudden, boom, we're going to see, like, oh my gosh, we didn't even understand the beginning of this new world. So Eric, we're almost out of time. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. I mean, this is so fun. This might have to become a daily podcast someday. give us why a 45-year-old dude, and how old are you?
23.
How are a 23 and a 45? And I know a guy, and you know him too, Dan Sullivan. He's 78 or 6 or something. He's passionate about it. And then you have my son who's 16. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why is this literally affecting every generation? Why is it not a young man's game? I heard that recently. Some guys like, oh, tech is a young man's game. But you and I know guys in their 70s and 80s who are crushing it. Why is this something that everyone should pay attention to?
Well, I think it's simple. I think the greatest example to look at is social media. I think everybody is on social media, whichever platform it is. I know my grandmother uses Facebook. Like, everybody's on social media now. You know, the internet is becoming its own thing, where everybody is starting to become a part of it. And this is, like I said, Web 3.0. This is the next step of the internet. So, you know, the way I see it is, you know, whether you can accept this is something that's could become part of your life, or it just will be sort of like social media in the beginning. I know for sure a lot of people that were the older demographic that currently use it, maybe more than me today, were very against the technology. Like, oh, why would he do that? Talk to people face to face. That doesn't make sense. And, you know, social media brings people together on a whole another level, because Carrie, honestly, if we didn't utilize, you know, technology, me and you wouldn't have built our relationship. Me and you wouldn't have spoken.
That's true. You and I have never physically met, and yet we've done all kinds of things together.
Mm-hmm.
And here's maybe the point, Eric. Unless trust is shared, I would just encourage anyone to debate this. Think about your example for a moment. You go into a stranger's car on Uber in a dark city that you don't even know just because of shared trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts. Like, yes. If you would have said 30 years ago, oh yeah, you're going to open your phone, press a button, and a stranger's going to pick you up in their car that you've never met before, might not even speak your language, and they're going to drive you, and you'd be like, what are you talking about? But because we have shared trust, where we can see ratings, and did Uber hire that person, and was there a background check? Yeah, there's once in a while some kind of thing sketchy that happens, but for the most part, it scales trust. And I think what you're saying is that the blockchain scales trust in crazy ways. I mean, you and I went on LinkedIn and we pressed somebody's profile, and we could see that in a second, it said blockchain verified and that they had really gone to a certain university.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. You need that today because you don't know who people are. But what if you could go on a LinkedIn profile and all of a sudden you press their button? Yep, they did go to that school. And yep, there was their transcripts. And yep, they are certified. And yet all of a sudden, everyone's life is transparent. And let's talk about that for as we close today. Should that freak us out or should that it be exciting?
Well, put it this way, just how you explained the trust factor. Okay, so you, like you said, there is a shared trust. For whatever reason, Uber has its reputation, there's a shared trust behind it. What blockchain does, it removes that factor. There is no need for me to trust any other actor because the blockchain verifies what is as is and what is as isn't, and in a decentralized manner where there isn't one or two people that are basically the gatekeepers to this trust that say, yes, this is true, yes, no, this is not true. This is a completely decentralized network with where anybody that participates contributes into verifying the ledger. You know, so if you hold it, if you hold this token, I hold this token, we contribute to basically verifying the ledger as true. So essentially, people all over keep basically copies of this ledger. And through the incentivized mechanism that is blockchain, through mining, through validating, the way it works is that...
Is it called like proof of work?
Proof of work is Bitcoin. There's different... These are called consensus mechanisms where people and users come together to basically verify the network, and they're all incentivized different ways. There's proof of work, which is Bitcoin, still Ethereum, which requires, you know, big electricity, you know, a lot of work from the electricity to verify this. There's proof of stake, where you require a lot of tokens, and those tokens contribute to validating the network. There's proof of history. They're called consensus mechanisms. But the point is, they're all incentivized, and as long as humans like assets and they like money, which is true, you know, human, that is a human factor, that humans are greedy. Everybody will verify what is true and what is not true, just from the greed standpoint. But what's good about this technology is that it aligns two things that are very hard to align in the world, but they happen to align here, is that they align human greed with good intent. And the good intent is to create trustlessness, where you don't need to, do I trust this person or not? Because the blockchain takes care of that for you. So I guess that's our point for today. This technology aligns two things that are very hard to align. And when you align them, something beautiful happens. And that's human greed, which can be good or bad, but it aligns it with good intent of verifying transactions are true or not true.
That's so good. And if anyone doubts this, let me just drop in the last example. Wikipedia. Wikipedia put out of business something called Encyclopedia Britannica, which you were too young for.
I know what it is.
Okay. But the point is that Wikipedia is just a small example of how a consensus puts together and verifies an encyclopedia that's shared trust today. And you would have thought of that 20 years ago and been like, that's the dumbest thing in the world. How would people, humans, verify and put out of business this big institution called Encyclopedia Britannica? That's what's happening, folks. You haven't seen anything yet. Blockchain is going to take out some institutions that have been around forever because it's the new way. And it's based upon trust and shared ownership versus an institutionalized form of external truth. So folks, this gets me excited. Eric, thanks for being here. We're going to cut it off because you and I, we've had chats till 1 a.m. at times about this. But folks, thanks for being part of Blockchain Life, and this thing is going to evolve and get bigger, and Eric's going to bring on more guests, and I'm going to bring on more guests, and we have no idea what's going to happen. So thanks for being here, Eric, and thanks for
listening. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll see you.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.